Call the BOE session back to order. Ms. Walden, hello. We are, I guess we're going to start with 0058 is your BOE number. Is that the one? Trinity Christian Academy?
Yes, that's okay. Correct.
All right. So you, yes. We're going to start with?
With Dave Graham deal.
Yes. All right. Go ahead.
Okay.
You've been here before, so we...
I have been here before. It's lovely to see you all again. This is an application for an exemption on the property that was formerly the Hollister Elementary School. It was purchased in 2007 by Dane Braden, and it's been operated as Trinity Christian Academy, which is just a school. It's an elementary school using that building the same as it was used prior to that. It's just now a private school. The parent company, Trinity Christian Academy, is a DBA name for New Life Academy of Taney County. I believe I submitted, but if I didn't, I have it today, the nonprofit corporation status of New Life Academy of Taney County. I also have their 501c3 letter if you need it.
Okay.
Mr. Braden is an officer of New Life Academy of Taney County as well as owning the property as an individual. He's leased it to New Life Academy of Taney County but has never received a lease payment, so it's always been used by the 501c3 since his date of purchase in 2007. We're asking that this property be exempted from property tax because it is used for school purposes only. The entire parcel is used purely by the school, and there's an agreement between Mr. Braden and New Life Academy of Taney County that it only be used as a school and for educational purposes.
All right. Jane?
Is that a typographical error on your application for the hearing here? You put the purchase date of 1997.
It was 2007. I believe I provided the warranty deed. If I put 1997 on there, I apologize. That is a typographical error.
Right.
If you need the warranty deed, I have a copy here for you.
James?
I don't have accepted this board on any exemption. I have no quarrel against the exemption.
Okay.
We just seen a time frame there that was kind of lax on the property being for sale versus, and as you see, it was sometime in 07 after the first of the year, the closing date. There was taxes paid at the closing, so I have no quarrel with it.
Who did he buy it from?
He bought it from the Hollister Reorganized School District R5 of Taney County on September 14th, 07.
But they prorated taxes anyway?
It went on as commercial in 07 because I believe it had been for sale by the school district prior to that time. So I believe that's what happened. And from 07 to today, the taxes have just been paid at actually a valuation of near $1.8 million commercial. So
you've been getting hammered on taxes.
Like. Bob, is there any issue with this that you're aware of?
I didn't realize we were doing an exemption issue, but 137... Where is it?
Point 100,
and,
subsection 5.
Yeah, probably. It's 137-100, and it says that property used exclusively for worship or for schools or colleges. That would be exempt. I don't have my checklist with me. But,
right.
Okay, so it doesn't address who the actual title holder is. It just says if it's used for...
It's used only.
It's used and not the owner.
Not the nature of the owner.
The ownership. Actually, if an owner is leasing it, to someone that's using it as a school, and he's getting market value for it.
Then his leased fee interest is taxable.
Correct.
Okay.
But
his leasehold would not be.
Well, the value of the property, okay,
yeah.
If I lease it to you and you have a church there, or if I lease it to you and you have a school there, it's my property that I'm using for lease purposes. It's not being used for school purposes, even though the leasehold is that.
So your rental income would not be without taxing. Being taxed.
Or the value of the property.
Okay. He's leasing it to them under an actual lease.
He does.
And his rent is something nominal or something.
It's $1 a year and he has the opportunity to waive it.
Enough to be considered consideration to make it a binding lease. Basically.
Correct.
So
he receives no income. He receives absolutely no income from the property.
What is that space for?
I want to look at you guys do what you want, but I mean, basically, you have somebody leasing property to another entity, and I'm not disputing that it's
Bob,
if they own the property, it wouldn't be completely exempt.
Bob, the issue, I don't want to muddy the waters here, but the issue is use. The issue is not ownership. And the issue is use of the actual real estate. And the use of the real estate is purely religious purposes.
In order to determine the use, you have to determine who the owner is. It's how the owner is using the property.
This is just like the Dapridge Sports Club issue. This is just like all of those where... Well, no, but I'm just saying it's the same thing. It's a 501c3. They have an interest in the entire property, the underlying ground, and the improvements. It's been used as a school forever. It's leased to the school purely for school purposes. I don't think there's any argument. He receives no income from it, so any exception to the exemption doesn't apply. And I don't think there's any argument that that it should be taxed as anything other than.
I'm not saying exempt. It shouldn't, but I kind of would agree with Bob. I mean, the person that owns it, a church can own a property and still pay taxes on it because they're not using it strictly for purposes of the church.
You're right.
And this is a lot of that going around.
That's right, but this is used purely for school purposes.
You know, of it and the use, you know,
it's not
two different things.
Well, but you're right. The ownership and the use are two different things, but the qualification in the statutes is purely use, not ownership.
Use by the owner.
No, that's not what it says.
I think it just says use.
It just says use. All property, real and personal, actually and regularly used exclusively for religious worship, for schools and colleges, or for purposes purely charitable, and not held for private or corporate profit.
Who gets taxed, though? Lessees do not get...
Yeah, they do.
The person that leases the property, unless they have a leasehold interest, that's a bonus value, correct?
Which they apparently do if they're leasing for $1 a year. Market rent's way above contract rent. So if I were to split
so the hairs, leasehold interest has no tax, but
no,
what
the
about the actual property itself?
The lease fee does, and the value of the lease fee is the right to collect that $1 for the remaining term of the lease plus the reversion present value. So how long is the term of the lease?
Forever. I mean, it's a 99-year lease, and it's renewable.
The leasehold is exempt. I wouldn't disagree with you, but the ownership of the property is taxed.
So his
Bob,
value,
where does it say that? Where does it say that the ownership of the property is taxed? This says all property, real and personable,
used. Says
look,
the use.
The owner of the property is taxed for their real estate.
That's true.
Okay.
But the question on how it's taxed is the use.
What he owns is a leased fee interest in the property. The property may have a fee simple value of billions of dollars. Apparently, he paid $200,000 for it. But he gave them a favorable lease for whatever reason. The value of his leased fee is going to be the right to collect $1 a year for the next 99 years and reversion at the end.
The owner of the property, if he leased it for $1,000 a month, okay, he's using it as property that he's leasing to someone. It doesn't matter who he's leasing it to.
So what do you tax? Are you saying we should tax the fee simple value or the value of his actual interest in real estate? His actual interest in real estate is the leased fee.
No, it's just like you owning a house. It's about
Just like me owning a house that I lease for $1 a year. My interest is worth.
We don't pay taxes on interest. We pay it on the improvement.
You're trying to use the capital.
No, I'm saying the market value of his interest in the real estate is nominal.
You're trying to use the income capitalization rate. You're trying to use
using market value.
Perhaps this will clarify it. There is an exception in the statute that says that if it's for investment purposes, the exemption does not apply. This is clearly not used for investment purposes. Go ahead, Kelly.
I was just going to say, if you were to split that hair, that's how I think it would be split between leasehold and leased fee, which is going to be the issue on the airport, I believe. Mm-hmm. But the statute's fairly explicit. It just speaks to the use of the property regardless of who owns it.
Okay, hold on one second. Do you need more time to research?
Yes.
Okay. Right now, our legal opinion, we don't have one because he wasn't prepared for this discussion. So it'd be best that he was prepared for some research on this. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Is there a question specific to this exemption that we haven't asked, that the board wants to ask?
Yeah. I mean, if I own a piece of property myself and I lease it to a church, wants to lease that property to hold services in, say a real large house or just a shop building or whatever, then the use of it would determine that I don't want to pay taxes, right? No matter how much money I'm making off of it.
Well, no, that's not necessarily true. The statute says, and I can give you all a copy of the statute, but the statute says...
That would probably fall into the investment realm of the...
That's right. If it's used for investment purposes, there is an exception to that exemption. But this case is very clear. It's been used as a school. It continues to be used as a school. The entity that uses it is a 501c3. Mr. Braden, the underlying property owner, receives no income from the property. There is no investment value in the property. And so, James and I are in agreement on this. It's an exempt property. I don't understand
what... How is it being used, and by whom is it being used? A person leasing a property is not the owner of the property and is not generally the one that is taxed, unless they're taxed on some sort of leasehold interest. So the owner is the one who is taxed, and it's the owner's use of the property that dictates how it's taxed or not taxed. Not the if I have a shopping center and I've got Macy's and three other retail stores in there, and I happen to get the same rate, which seems impractical and not possible, but from a church that's in the same mall, is all of a sudden no taxes on that part of the property because I'm leasing to a church. It's being used as
let me finish. Go
it's
ahead.
Being used for lease purposes, and a dollar. Obviously, they're not making much from it. But does that change it so that it should be exempt? And I haven't done the research on that. But you guys can do what you want.
I would think that if you were to parse the language of the statute, it sounds like they wrote it so that the user is the indirect object of the preposition, and not necessarily the owner. It sounds fairly explicit. It says if the property is used, and it doesn't address who the user is.
But what is the use?
Let me make sure I understand that. Bob may have an opinion after he does some research and come back and says, I agree with Carrie, and let's do that.
That very well be the case.
So I really think that if we've got all of our questions, let's give Bob the courtesy of some research and come back and deliberate that.
I'd like to say something about
thank you.
The past of this right quick.
Okay.
Hobby Lobby was taxed on the White River Cathedral until they deeded it over to the church. They leased it to the church for 5 years with a dollar a year, and they sent it over to the church. It was always taxed while Hobby Lobby owned it, in defense of Bob.
Yeah.
And what he's trying to prove. But up north, where QPS to Dahl, what is the name of the place?
Bonnie Brook.
I had taxed. The board
took it off.
Testimony took it off, even though it was owned by an individual under a 99-year lease. So to say...
So we've been inconsistent.
Every other decision. So,
well, gotcha.
So that's just where I'm going to leave it at. And
that's what I was going to... Would Braden be willing to just deed the property over to the church?
The issue with that is... And it's not a church, it's a school, just so that we're clear. And Mr. Braden is available by phone conference if we have any clarification questions for him. The reason he's not deeded it to New Life Academy at this point in time is because the intention is for there to be improvements made on the property by individuals and donated it back to the school as well. So they're trying to give the best thing they can back to the school.
So that when he takes his donation, he takes it on the more improved property.
Right. However, his whole purpose, he personally owns it. He's the president, and there's other individuals involved in the corporation that use the property. The whole intention for that property was always to be used as a private school, Trinity Life Academy. There has never been any other purpose of that property made that I'm aware of. It was used by Hollister Schools first. And I guess I understand. I don't know exactly what Bob has to do research on, but I mean...
So
I'd be happy to clarify
what
as much
I'd like
as possible.
To suggest
Gary, I think I've made it quite obvious what I need to do research on.
Well,
and you may disagree, but it's
Stop. What we want to do is let Bob do some research. Once we get the information, let's make sure we have Carrie available by phone, and we'll bring it back up and just reschedule this one. Okay?
Just one clarification on what she just said, though. Mr. Braden, you said has other partners on it that use some of the property?
No. I meant that there are other officers in New Life Academy, the 501c3 organization, that could testify to its use.
Okay. I'm sorry. I thought you meant that he had
some other... No, he personally, as an individual, owns the real estate, but there are other individuals who are officers of New Life Academy of Taney County Corporation.
Gotcha.
So basically, he is wanting the improvements made to the property, and then he will donate it to them at some point and take a tax write-off.
Yeah.
Presumably. I mean, I'm not Mr. Braden, I don't know, but...
It sounds like the reason he's keeping titles because he's trying to...
It's an investment.
He's trying to time the tax write-off to his best benefit,
no.
I imagine.
I mean,
all right. Yeah. So let's do... This is... you work with Bob on when he's ready to come back, and Carrie, you can do this via phone on this case.
That would be fine. I would like, if I may, I know that the July 28th hearing date was previously open. Mr. Braden will be out of the country at that time, so if we could do it prior to that, I would really appreciate it.
Okay. All right. We're going to change gears to the – that was the one unique out of the rest of the ones. Okay.
Yes.
So we're going to change gears and go to – I guess it's a classification. Is that correct?
It is.
All right. We will change gears and –
Is this the Festiva?
It is.
All of them,
I guess we're going to be talking
about. There's
36
parcels, but it's all the same request. It's all the same parcel. I mean, it's all the same
classification
question. So all the Festivas? Yes.
Okay. And just for the board information, at 3:45, we're supposed to go back into normal session, correct?
We have another tax plan at 3:45.
Gotcha. So we're in good shape.
Okay.
All right.
This application is an application for a split in classification. It is on timeshare property. The property is known as the Cabins at Green Mountain, not to be confused with privately owned condominiums known as the Cabins at Grand Mountain. These are not related. Cabins at Green Mountain is a timeshare project that was developed by Festiva Resorts, LLC. The only reason we did not appeal this last year at the same time we appealed for the splits at Grand Regency and French Quarter and the other timeshares was purely because our clients just didn't notify us in time. So that's why we're here today. I have provided, and I'll provide you all copies at this time, with rental data, which has been our standard for determining the classification split on the other timeshare properties. We have requested a 96-4 split, 96% residential, 4% commercial split. We're showing the 2008 rental data today on each of the 36 parcels. And the average nightly rental usage is 3.73%. This is, for many of you, and I don't mean to be redundant, I know many of you have been through this with me lots of times. The argument here is that these are condominium units. They are sold and deeded weeks to timeshare owners. The timeshare owners all possess an underlying interest in the real property. They have a deeded week recorded with the Taney County Recorder. There is a portion, a very small portion, of the 36 parcels that are used for nightly rental. The cabins are not marketed as nightly rental. It's really just a promotion thing if people walk in the door and want an opportunity to visit the property. So
nightly rentals are just for minivacs, is that what you're saying?
And not even that much. Minivacs are usually at other locations. These are really sort of promotional things done in addition to minivacs. So you can see the average nightly rental usage on these units is 3.73%. We've just rounded up and asked you for a 96-4 split, 96% usage either being that it sits vacant or is used by an owner. 96 and those all of those units are sold out. So the vacant weeks would be owner weeks. They're not weeks. As you know, the standard for determining commercial classification for the purposes of lodging and nightly rental is whether or not there is sales tax paid on those nights. So I have not provided you with the sales tax records, but I can. It's these summary pages that I just provided you are based on the number of nights where sales tax was paid in 2008. And then in 2009, just in case you're curious, I know the valuation is to be set as January 1, 2009, but the The nightly rental usage in 2009 was 4.1%. So we're just asking for a 96% residential to 4% commercial split. We've not argued valuation at all. We believe valuation's fair. And so that would change the we've provided the assessed value that we believe is correct on each of the applications. And I also have today what may be a helpful breakdown. I don't know. It's the parcel ID. And
do we already have that, you think?
You do not have this.
Cindy, probably not. Okay.
Because I just compiled
all right.
Information today.
So what you see there, the gray boxes that are highlighted are the current assessed valuations assigned to those parcels by the assessor. And then the two columns to the right of that are our proposed assessed values. And then the two columns to the right of that are our proposed split in the market valuations. The total valuations do not change. Do you have any questions for me?
It's strictly a classification request. Before we have questions for Carrie, I was going to let James, this usually James and Bob usually give us a lot of information to have arguments over. So, Bob, James, go ahead.
Well, the thing that I've had Bob look up here, and I was a little concerned when Carrie called me, but describing it as the other issues as being a timeshare, these are actually platted as condominiums. These are not platted as a timeshare building. Did you know that?
Well, so is French Quarter. French Quarter is platted as a condominium.
Well, that's what
the
you
same one. You plat all of them as a condominium.
And then there's each
individual condominium sold with 52 weeks or 54 weeks, whatever they decide to do. If you look at French Quarter, where we have this exact same scenario on, they're platted as a condominium as well.
But timeshare buildings are not, are they?
Yes.
Yeah.
So is Wyndham by Worldmark, so is Grand Regency. They all are platted as condominiums, and then the developers sell each unit a 1/52nd interest in unit number one, lot four, whatever, and then...
You establish the timeshare regime on top of the condominium.
Legit.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you do that. Yes. The question, though, is the one of classification, and that has to do with the use. Well, actually, the availability of the unit. Correct.
That's correct.
And each of these is just a cabin unit.
Some of them are two cabins, lockout units. There's, I think, six or seven parcels where you have two units side by side in a lockout. But for all intents and purposes, yes, they're cabins.
And they're sold in 2-week increments to people.
One week increments, either annually, biannually, or triennially.
Okay. And each of those units is a separate fee simple unit, and people either use them or they put them in the nightly rental program.
That's accurate. But very few, on this particular property, very few are put into the nightly rental program.
How do we know how many are in the rental program and how many aren't?
Those are the number of nights that I've shown you are the number of nights that were used for nightly rental. The remainder of the weeks are generally banked. At this particular property, the remaining weeks are very rarely used for nightly rental. They are banked for use elsewhere.
Banked for use elsewhere, which means they're not used here, which means these are used here for someone else who's not the owner of the fee simple, or do they not own a fee simple at this?
The timeshare owners own a fee simple in the week, but the only weeks that are used for nightly rental are the weeks shown on that summary page.
Used, but not necessarily available. And what you're saying is they don't put it in the nightly rental program, but they can still not use it and have that unit used during the week that they would normally have to use that, and they would use one somewhere else.
So is this the deal, if I can add to that, somebody from a different project can come in here and stay in that unit?
Potentially, but there's no sales tax paid on those because those are owners as well.
Is that what you're talking about?
It's a lot like the point system where you get points and you can stay wherever you want. In this case, you have this one, but you can bank it and go somewhere else.
Well, it's like the IRCI program or whatever program, so yeah.
But again, the question on commercial use is what is subject to sales tax, and only those nights that are subject to sales tax are commercial use.
Well, those are, that's just the standard that the courts use or that the statute is used to?
Statute, as well as the state tax commission and the courts.
And what the sales tax enters into it, but it has to do with whether they're predominantly available for use on what would be a sales taxable event.
And this is something that we've gone around and around because it really is unclear on how to determine this on timeshare. We've arrived at this split on, I don't know, six or seven other properties in the county. And this is...
I mean, I remember the ones from last year.
Yeah.
So that was the established...
criterion.
Right.
And it wasn't corrected this year in the legislature.
It was
Once
not.
Once again, the legislature did not come through with
James it. James has the split right now. I guess he's doing it by between... That's the reason it's split
it's
between...
common area and improvements.
And at like 12% residential...
Correct me if I'm wrong, James, that the area that's shown as res right now on these parcels is the portion of the property that is attributable to common areas, and then the remaining improvements that are attributable to individual use is all commercial.
Okay, so that's how you came up with your...
Common area
and
commercial building.
So he currently has it as how much residential and how much commercial?
Well, it's 1,900 residential, but that's taking effect the common area, and then the rest is commercial. So
19% residential?
No.
Let me give you the percent.
What does he have it and what does she want it?
A lot. It's a big...
Just
vice
versa.
Okay.
Just turn the number.
Well, actually, probably more than that.
I have kind of a stupid question for the assessor office. Bestie owns that whole property, right? And it's
well...
The homeowners, the timeshare regime owns the whole property and pays taxes on the whole property.
Yes. So essentially what happens on the common area is that the common area is attributable to each condominium unit as it would be on any condominium parcel. And so then the...
Well, I'm wondering why it's not... All of these aren't on one parcel as units one through whatever of this condo. And instead you're valuing individually each condo.
I think the reason, and I don't want to speak for James, but I think the reason is just because of the statute in relation to condominium units, which says that a unit, regardless of whether the regime is timeshare or individual ownership, but each unit has to be valued individually.
Okay, even if somebody owns the whole building, owns the whole condominium.
Well, but each actual condominium unit has upwards of 100 owners.
Yeah, so each condominium
one number.
It's so. Approximately, it's not, the current split is 94% commercial, 6% residential. Obviously, it would reverse plus a little bit more. Right, right.
Wait. The current split is
94% commercial, 6% residential.
And you're asking for
the 96 res, 4%
commercial. We were
commercial.
Talking about
2%.
BOE
no,
numbers.
No, changing it.
Oh, 96
nine, residential.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
Hey, Cindy.
So why is it 90?
Are these in here?
Yes.
Okay.
The only one I see is 024, and it's not one of these properties.
Here.
Your client responded to us and said it was commercial.
Here.
In 09.
Yeah, I do. I responded to you and said it wasn't. I wrote you a long letter. Gave you a big packet of information, just like I did on French Quarter. And you left them all commercial.
I thought you said they'd never appealed before.
Okay.
No, they've never formally
Chuck
appealed. Festiva's never formally
Chuck,
appealed.
So, going backwards, before the Supreme Court thing that gave us all kinds of grief, James was portioning what he thought was right, commercial and residential. Everything was running along pretty good. And then the Supreme Court thing, and we had catastrophes.
Well, what exactly?
You're talking about Shipman versus Dominion Hospitality?
Hospitality case.
But now, what I'm...
What was the upshot of that case?
Basically, what they said is that if it's predominantly used or available for transient rental with less than 30 days, meaning, I guess, 183 days a year, then it's 100% commercial and you don't apportion it.
The problem with Shipman, and Bob and I will go around and around on this, but the problem with Shipman was that it was about a long-term, it was about a hotel that was typically commercial, typically nightly rental, that got switched to long-term rental. So it was basically the reverse decision So it's about all we have to go off of in timeshare, but I would make a really strong argument that it's the reverse fact pattern.
Is it characterized that the development is predominantly available for nightly rental?
No. No. It's not. It's... Sorry.
I was just going to say, I mean, you're claiming no, it's not predominantly available for nightly rental. What's your position on that?
Well, what is it used for? Okay, how many of the people, here's the other argument, how many of the people who actually own the units actually spend their time there? And if they're not spending their time there, obviously it's not being used for residential purposes, is being used for some other purpose.
So you're saying,
well, that's not necessarily true, because I own a second house, and if it's sitting there vacant, that's not necessarily true.
Just because they're not using it,
is it sitting there vacant?
This way, therefore it must be the other way.
Is it sitting there vacant, though?
So are you making the presumption that if it's there vacant, it's available for an actual rental? I'm not, I don't know.
I guess what I would like to say is just I would like to go for consistency at this point, because we've made this agreement on 6-7 other timeshare regimes here in the county. I totally agree that this situation needs to be resolved either with legislation or a court decision. It's not been. So our criterion up to this point has been, what can we prove that it's used for? I can prove that it's been used for 4% nightly rental. We're saying, yes, it's 4% nightly rental, and that's why I'm asking for a 96-4 split.
Go ahead.
So what I was trying to say is, it appears that, and what Kerry just said adds to it, since we don't have legislation, and the way things are going, we don't know. Anyway, we don't have legislation that's corrected, period. That's enough there. So we're being asked to go back to what you were doing, James, and that is, I think, a pretty fair way of going. Are we going to, if we do this, are we going to look at all of them that way?
The only thing we've got is a major problem in the Supreme Court tried to address it, sales tax and being collected.
Right.
And that throws all the transient housing. So my question to Randy Turley today, this morning at 10 o'clock, knowing Kerry was going to be here, Russ. The other guy, Russ. did the Supreme Court mean sales tax and or transient housing? Did they mean sales tax or transient
housing? Did Randy want to interpret that?
He's going to try.
Well,
where the Supreme Court messed up. They did.
Right.
Where they put their commas and put their periods is going to mean the whole thing. If they said sales tax collected meant commercial properties, the timeshare business and everybody else is in trouble down here. If they said either or, okay.
Well, my argument is, and I think I've argued this in years past, is the old deal of better government's where it's local. If we're here and somebody brings us something and we buy it as being true, and it's not a motel or that should be commercial, then let's make the decision here until they come along and make us a law that we can go by. Because it's just... one of those deals.
If you're going to do that, though, is it really just 4% commercial?
But that's how much they actually.
But let me ask you this question, though. We've established, on purpose, indirectly, that they can do this on other resorts of similar layout. We've established if you can prove it, we're going to do that. I think last year we voted this way, correct?
You did.
So all I'm asking is, for the sake of consistency, I would say we do this, unless this is not apples and apples. If this is apples and oranges, I need someone to tell me.
Is this what happened in the stipulations or whatever, how we say
it,
that?
It is. On French Quarter, Grand Regency, and
because you all worked that out.
Palace View by Spinnaker. That's what all of these were.
Right. That was James and them working it out.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
If I may, though, we were dealing with the cases before. I was hoping that... In the coming year, there would be a solution presented by the legislature, which has not occurred.
Which has failed.
And now we're having all kinds of other cases brought before this board, which is...
So all these others should be treated the same way?
Did we do this on French Quarter last year?
Yes.
The BOE did?
Yep.
Yes.
I have a real nasty thought on this. We're not going to get any guidance from the legislature. We're only going to get it from the Supreme Court. And the only way it's going to go up the food chain that far is if it gets denied here.
But it's been denied here. That's when the stipulation happened, and they established this ratio.
Yes.
Okay.
We've gone through this. We've been going through this deny and stipulation process since 07.
You're right. We could deny it and just say we're not settling and go to litigation over it and let the Supreme Court decide it.
And then let
or we could have the legislature fix it.
But we've said that before for years, haven't we, Bob?
But how do
we would assure, we had people in here from Florida, from North Carolina.
That was ARDA.
We had a whole house full of attorneys, and they said they were going to get that done for us. And we kind of went as a good faith effort that they was going to get it done for us.
There was something introduced this last session that didn't pass.
Okay, I'm going to be unpopular. I'm going to move that we change classification based off of the standards we've established in years prior to change it from as requested. The 96% residential, 4% commercial on the properties presented. That's my motion.
I'll second the motion for discussion.
Okay. What cases did we have come up last year before the BOE that like
this?
French Quarter.
French Quarter, Grand Regency, Palace View by Spinnaker, and
we had all those
Palace View South.
But the decisions were not made by the BOE. It was made by Bob, James, and...
No, those three were last year.
Some were decided by BOE.
That's right.
Those three were decided last year by the BOE.
And we decided in the
similar form
of what we're talking about today.
Yes. I was before you last year on similar cases.
So in order to be equitable between all the timeshare projects, we need to go along with those probably.
Well, no, you want to remember one thing.
I can't remember what I had for breakfast this morning. Yeah. I don't know what we did last year.
Well, I wasn't
and what the facts were. The facts could have been different, and that's what I don't remember.
My major concern is should this BOE, and I don't even know that we should be concerned, but if taxes are set at a commercial value and this case is won, does that go back to the timeshare recipients or does that go to the corporation that owns the timeshare?
It goes to the taxpayer.
Does it go to the 5,000 or 6,000?
It goes to the association that cuts
the
check.
The dues are paid by the they have to submit a budget to their owners or something.
Correct.
So it eventually gets back to the timeshare owners, but it filters through.
I mean, you can ask every time we've done an appeal and Sheila's issued a refund, it's gone back to whatever long string association, owners association.
But I'm very simple-minded. Wouldn't that say the association dues would be going down?
Yeah, that's
not necessarily. If the offset is that the other overhead is increased, I mean, that's an issue. I mean,
but the taxes they pay on the real estate is one of the components of the costs of the association.
Sure.
So it would filter down to the owners, but it would be a process going through their budgets and all that kind of junk.
Sure.
That should be brought up. It was taxed.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Any more discussion? We had the second by Chuck, if you didn't have that. Mm-hmm. All right. Seeing no more discussion, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay. I'd still like to see some of the facts
like
of last year.
I'd like to say I'm not just like that.
Okay. Motion does carry 3-2. All right. Anything else?
That's all I've got.
Okay.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right.
So tell me what's going to happen with the rest of the condos out there.
We're fixing to lose all our commercial value.
You're going to have all kinds of commercial value just flowing in the county.
Yeah.
Okay, but we should have had this conversation last year. Did we have the same conversation last year?
We did.
Okay. It didn't plummet this year.
Next year's reassessment. Yeah.
Okay.
They can come.
Just put it on your paper if you would.
Sorry.
All right. We have our next scheduled appointment is at 3:45, which we can go ahead and start. I believe we've got.
It looks like.
Oh,
this is
Russell Fisher.
Okay.
And Cook.
But are they all represented by all these?
There's 200 parcels.
These 200. This is your turn. Okay, so.
And it's all under, you'll see it on your thumb drive there. It's called Russell Cook Agent Classification Change or something. There's no numbers.
It's the last one on there, too.
Yeah, it's the last one.
To simplify, we tried to do one form and attach a list.
Yeah.
Hopefully make it easier on everybody.
Easier.
Thank you, Cindy. Appreciate it.
So that we didn't have a 400-page PDF to open?
Yeah.
I tried. Is this foothills or just stuff all over the 1,000 miles?
I see the locations here, so we've heard none of these last year.
No.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to disqualify that. There is notes that you'll see.
These little stars?
Actually, there is a few that were on your list that actually have appealed themselves and had already previously appealed. And then there is maybe, but then nothing that where they appealed last year.
I have a pretty narrow issue to bring before you, and I think I can explain it. And once you hear it will kind of make sense.
It's classification. My understanding is that it's a change, much as if there was new construction. Classification is not the same during all 2 years. If somebody buys a place that was used commercial and they're living there, I mean, it's not commercial. It's a change in classification.
Okay.
And all he's arguing, my understanding, is that there's a change in classification because they have some sort of agreement. I don't know if it passes muster or not, but with the owners,
we're basically
go ahead.
I'm basically
go ahead.
Saying the class they're classified wrong. And here's the Dominion case.
Okay.
Here, let me tell you what I'm asking for, and then I'll explain why. And excuse me a second. I have to wear glasses now, and I'm not used to it, and I forgot them, so please bear with me.
So if Bob's making faces at you, you won't know that?
No, I can see you guys. Okay. I just can't see this.
All right, Bob.
Okay. First off, this is not timeshare. These are condominium units, and there is a significant difference. Okay. And some of these have been appealed, and we've done some appeals in the past, and here's basically what we're asking for. I represent a bunch of condominiums that the primary use is a vacation home. People buy these vacation homes to come to Branson. They do put them on rental programs to supplement their income, but they're not commercial generated. I mean, when we went through this before, I argued last year on a different set with Titch at the what was that?
Bart Tishner.
Right at the hearing. On the commercial issue, that basically what happens is you end up having properties classified as commercial, but then we appraise them with residential valuations, because if you truly looked at a commercial, I realize there's many ways to appraise, and I know there's holes in what I'm saying, but generally a commercial property, you look at an income approach. Well, as you well know, if you looked at an income approach on these properties, they'd be worthless. So there's an inherent unfairness in classifying them as commercial. So I know you guys ruled last year on a bunch of these and different things like that, and we've tried to find a way to reverse this inequity, because the Dominion case sits out there and says, as Bob said before, if on a property, if it is available for nightly rental for more than basically 183 nights a year, it has to be classed as commercial, totally. There's no room. And in my purpose, I don't care really if it's transient use or sales tax, it's going to be the same. So what we did, and I presented this on a non-binding basis to Titchener, and also mentioned it to Bob, and again, I'm not trying to say Bob agreed to anything, but here's what we came up with. There's a management company, and they have adopted a policy that they will not, without an owner signing a piece of paper, adopt a policy as of January 1, 2010, they would not offer any unit for more than 179 nights in a year. There's enough units in the pool that they can work this on their computers. So we're hoping that will say, okay, it's not all commercial. It's not available for more than 133 nights. So, okay, it's not commercial. That's the first step. The second step is, okay, if it's not absolutely commercial, then is it a mixed use? We have pretty good empirical data that across the board, most of these units are rented about 120 nights a year. So short version of what we're asking for is adopted this policy. The units are not available for rental for more than 179 nights a year without the owner's written permission. And the usage is roughly 120 nights a year. Now,
can I ask you a question about that statement just right
yes,
there?
Yes, uh-huh.
So when they sign that piece of paper, they are signing the fact that they're, in your argument that they would go, then go change the classification. They would qualify for change the classification.
No, if they wanted their unit available more than 180 nights or 179 nights or right. whatever,
100% commercial.
They would have to understand, okay, now that's going to be 100% commercial.
Okay, I didn't want to know what your argument was. Okay, go ahead.
So basically, we can't do it without the permission.
Okay.
I don't have, right now, I don't have the data to show you the 120 night tier. What I've been asked to do is, if that is a plausible scenario, this is kind of confidential stuff that not everybody would like, not like ever seen around in public record. We would be happy to supply the information to James, to show the usage, whatever you would like. You know, if you want to come look at the records or have us give them to you, whatever, we'd be happy to prove this. What we're basically asking for is one-third commercial, two-thirds residential. And I believe that prior to Dominion, that was pretty close to where we were on a lot of the stuff, if my memory is correct. And again, what we were trying to do is come up with a plausible way to satisfy the Dominion case, since our legislature. And I will tell you briefly about the bill that was attempted to be passed and was one week away, if my memory is correct, from being signed. What the bill stated, it was fine first off. And then they added a clause that basically said, they added a little phrase, when in use. Basically what they tried to do to the law is to try to look at the use rather than the availability. Well, someone didn't like the way it was worded, so they added this phrase. Well, right now, if you look at the availability, you take 365 nights as your denominator, and you say, okay, how much is it available? And that would be your numerator. The law changed was they used the phrase, when in use. And it's not for the whole year. It says, if when it's in use, it's commercial, then it's commercial. Well, that makes your bottom number, and throws 365, it makes your bottom number to be whatever nights it's used. So if it's used 10 nights a year, and they're commercial, or and they're nightly, it's 100% commercial. If they're two nights a year, and it's nightly, it makes sense. So that's why that legislation, we found that at the last minute, and basically, after Bob showed it to me, I read it, told Arda, and they said, "Oh crap, that's not what we meant." So they were trying to fix it last year, but it didn't get done. So back to our case.
Can I ask you how are the properties assessed right now? 100% commercial?
I believe that's correct.
With the common
as the outside. With the common as the, okay.
Right.
Thank you.
And again, where we start with is, let me tell you about Dominion. Carrie mentioned Dominion briefly. Dominion was a 75-95 unit hotel.
75-95
unit. I'm sorry, I said the wrong thing. 95 units. I started to say 75, I corrected myself.
Oh, 95, okay.
There were 95 units in this hotel. It was like a Residence Inn.
Okay.
We're not dealing with that. We're dealing with a single property, one unit. Every one of these is one unit. So you're taking a decision that was made for an ongoing business of 95 units, and we're now applying it to a single unit. Now, I'm not arguing that is right or wrong. I'm just saying that's what the tax commission has said they have to do, or James has to do. I don't think that's right. So we tried to find a plausible way around it to satisfy the Dominion case so that we're not in violation of it, but get a more fair result. And the bottom line of the more fair result is these places are not used primarily for commercial. They're vacation homes. They're rented out to help defray some of the costs. An appraiser that will look at these will tell you if you use the income approach, I doubt they're going to be worth anything in most cases because they're rented for less than a third of the year. Even if they were low value, it would still be a whole lot less than the value that's put on them already.
And in the Dominion case, the state tax commission was saying, look, we got to use a percentage, even on this hotel.
Right.
And it was the Supreme Court that said, no, wait a minute, it's 100% commercial.
And that wasn't their desire necessarily. That's the way they interpreted the statute using rules of interpretation.
And now the state tax commission is stuck following the Supreme Court's decision in Dominion, even though their approach had been, let's percentage it.
And I don't mean to put words in Mr. Titchener's mouth, but in discussions with him, and I'm not saying you have to do that. I'm just saying we kind of got along with this idea based on discussions with people, and he seemed to think it was a plausible, you know, obviously subject to your review, but he seemed to think it was a plausible mechanism.
Yes, sir. So your 120 days is about the average of what most of those units are out there on a nightly rental. Is that right?
That is, I don't want to say average. The average is lower than that, but that is about as many as any of them are rented.
That's the predominant maximum.
Right, that's the predominant maximum.
There
thank
may
you.
Be some that are over that.
If that's the case, my question for this is, if that's the case, then why isn't the policy 120 days versus 179 days?
Because 179 gets us below the limit.
It gets right. you below half.
But you're asking for one-third versus one-half.
Well, there's two elements. We do the 179, so you don't have to say it's commercial.
Okay.
So then we look at the actual use. And the actual. Now, the thing is, next year, if they were able to get 160 nights, well, the use has changed.
But I guess my question, your policy is 50-50, basically.
Our policy is set to get us out of being commercial.
Right.
The use is dictated by what actually happens with the market.
Okay.
But you're asking our assessor basically to every year look at the records of every one of those units individually because we have to figure every one of those units individually.
Well, that's how you have to do it anyway.
And
once you're using the use, you have to find out how much it's used anyway.
But I mean, if we go on a one third base or the what you're saying 120 days a third basis overall. That's not individual per unit.
Based off the policy. That's you're going off a policy concept here.
Again, the policy gets us out of Dominion.
Right.
The usage is what I'm telling you based on our data is across the board. Now, yes, one may be a quarter, one may be 40%. At the end of the day, the money to the county is basically the same all the way around. And like I said, they're happy to show the data to check it. And that's also available every year if we need to go. But do you have to do that every year or every 2 years?
2 years.
That's what I thought. Yeah. And if you're doing a mixed use anyway or you're using the use as your guideline, you have to come up with use anyway. In our case, we at least have good enough records that we can help the county and show them what's happening.
And rather than do 200 calculations, you can use the predominant cap, which will give you more than the average or more than the 200 individual calculations anyway.
Okay, Kelly had a question for you.
No, I was just going to make a comment. When Carrie was giving her presentation, the thought crossed my mind, you know, the natural solution for them would be if they came up with some sort of fictional thing where they said certain timeshares were only available for certain days, and that's how you set your, and if you plan it out right, you could get the same percentages by saying, my timeshare weeks is, you know, certain. My timeshare unit is only available 10% of the day, schedule the days and all that. And so you're coming up with these programs to where you're making some sort of statement that the thing is supposedly only available a certain proportion of the time.
Okay.
And I'm kind of wondering what the intention of the statute is. There's a commercial use of the property that takes up a certain percentage of the utility of the property, and there's a residential use of it that takes up another percentage of the use of the property. One of them you have really good records on. Another one you have not as good records on. And then there's a vacant area in there that you can interpret as being residential or commercial. And we don't really have any guidance other than if it's over 50%, you consider it all.
Well, there are several potential ways.
But let me.
The natural use of a regular condominium unit is purely residential. And I'd be inclined to say that when it is vacant, you would make the presumption that its use is still residential as a vacant condominium unit.
But that's not what the statute says.
Well,
and that's not what the Supreme Court says.
Actually, he's correct because he said use. Yeah. What the case
available.
Hits the availability, not the use. So we unfortunately the way they've done it, we have to look at two issues. We first have to look at the availability, and just something you were starting to say made me look at this. The way they determined the availability here was the little sign-in card that the customers did. Okay. So first we have to look at the availability. If it's available for less than 179 or 183, whatever the number is, less than half, then we at least have the opportunity to, now let's look at the use. if that's the point you look at the use. The use, and that's when your comment about if it's not being used as commercial, is it being used as residential? Well, I would agree with your comment that on a vacation home of this type, that if I owned one, and my intent, if it wasn't being rented, my intention would be to have it available for my use, whether I'm there or not, as a second home.
Well, Their point is, though, on the hotel, in the Dominion case, if you have a hotel and the room is for rent,
there's no residential purpose.
There's no residential purpose. It's being used as a commercial room. Just because you don't rent it doesn't mean it's not commercial.
And in the Dominion case, there is no residential purpose. The only type it was residential is if someone rented it for more than 30 days. Am I running out of time? I'm sorry.
Wait, James, I want to get James' opinion on this.
I've got two major issues. The way I did it, as fair as I could be with it, and 4 or 5 years ago, destroyed the commercial ratio in Taney County and created the lawsuit against the state. It was one of the driving factors because they used commercial ratio studies and pulled these condos that had on 30%, and they said that 30% is all they could use to value. This was part of it. I've had a hard time getting that through to everyone that I got ripped on this. And I got ripped for the timeshare and hotel motel industry. The entire county got a whipping because they thought I was doing as fair as I could do it. Secondly, you're going to have a major issue. I got a friend in Marshfield, Missouri that owns a boardwalk. No, promenade. His condo rented the first 28 days it was available.
Okay, this is not promenade. This is not promenade. Promenade, if you recall, is in a building that is a hotel.
Okay, you're going to have this somewhere else, too. The neighboring condo rented 12 times that same 30-day period. And if we don't watch what we're doing, if we put them all on at 30%, this neighboring condo is going to come in and say, hey, this guy's renting his for 80%. Why isn't his value 75% higher than mine?
The only reason I'm considering it is the policy based on this is all managed by the same management group.
Yes.
Correct?
Right.
That's the only reason I'm even considering the conversation because it's actually being monitored, and that's why the policy helps me with one management company to enforce it.
That's why the legislation needs
it's
to be
desperately
done.
Needed.
It's desperately needed because it destroyed our ratio the way I did it, caused all this 2005, 6, 7 lawsuits is they pulled 9 of these nightly rental condos out of the 35 draw.
Right.
Guys, and I don't want this DOE to put us back in that same situation and the state pull those out of there and start this.
So do you have a recommendation? Do you recommend this or recommend don't change it? What's your recommendation?
I thought the way I did it at the beginning before all this hit was fair as it could be.
And we agree with that.
But there's a but. It destroyed the entire ratio and destroyed the assessment process, and it went down and affected housing. It affected residential. It affected ag. It affected everything because they said you're not close enough, and it confirms that you're 25% out.
So are you saying don't mess with it?
Actually, this does not change the assessed value of the property.
Uh-oh. Right.
It changes the classification split.
Right. And the way they pull that, if you've got a split in those values, they pull the commercial value only. They give me no credit for the residential value. They take the commercial value only against the sales price.
And I come back to Dominion case. Here's the rules on valuing property, their uses. We've got it. We've met the terms of the Dominion case. We've got good history, good records on the use. And I'm not unsympathetic to James because I think he does a good job, and I don't want the state on his butt. But this is wrong.
And he said something nice about you, James.
We shouldn't. These owners shouldn't be the ones that get the brunt of the case interpreted in a wrong capacity.
Right.
And that's.
But can I say something?
Absolutely.
I think we've made decisions that are brought in here to us that when they go to, if we would make a denial of the deal and it went to the state has their own stinking problem to settle here. We all understand that. They've caused the confusion. Why don't we make them fix the confusion? And it'll never be fixed as long as we sit on this level and make a decision. When we make a decision, we tear up the total
We remove the incentive for them to take it
well, up. Right. All the incentive for to take it onto the top.
And I agree
exactly
with that, except.
That's exactly what I was saying with Carrie. You know, if we decide in her favor, we're never going to get a Supreme Court or somebody who can actually make a decision on this.
You decided in her favor. So.
Go ahead, Russ.
I agree, however, yeah. But...
It puts an onus on you guys to actually fund that process.
And there's your... We've done this before. We've been down this road. And we almost did it last year. But here's the but again. What happens if you do not agree is now we have to either pay under protest or file some appeal. We then have to come to the hearing again. We get Mr. Tischner involved. We do some sort of stipulations. We have a meeting. We usually have a pre-hearing conference that takes time, effort, money. Then, if he doesn't rule in our favor, then we, at that point, have to take it to a circuit court. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Take it to circuit court, get on the docket. We now have these funds sitting out there, possibly unusable for that period of time. Who knows how long it's going to take to get on that docket. Our clients have to fund it. We have to get a decision in the circuit court, and the circuit court has to rule against us. Because if they rule for us, then we haven't done anything there either. If they rule against us, we have to take it to the next level. And I believe we have to take it to the appellate court before we go to the Supreme Court. Is that correct?
Right.
In this case,
there's
a good
taxation,
Jeff,
straight to the Supreme Court.
But that's what I was thinking.
Revenue issues go directly.
That's what I thought. So we don't have to go to appellate, but then we have to go to the Supreme Court. And I'm sorry, I was just going to finish. The legal fees, the estimate we made on legal fees alone was roughly $100,000, not counting the county's cost.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
And the county's cost, and when we were looking at, was more than our tax.
I put the county in the position of actually,
Mr. Chairman,
arguing against
it. Go ahead.
The thing of it is what happens is exactly what James explained. Whenever you come in and we don't deny these cases and send them on to the state, the county loses funding because the ratio is out of whack at that point, and so we end up getting our funds held from the State Tax Commission, who this should be sent to straighten the mess out in the first place, but we get our funds withheld in the matter of $250,000 a year or whatever, and so the county ends up paying and the taxpayer ends up paying that situation instead of the owners of these condos. So I feel like that the denial of these cases, and we've already approved one today, but the denial of these cases sends it on, puts the burden upon the tax commission to make the decision that does not affect the ratio where we have to take our funding that they deny and lose it.
Okay. And I would agree with that, except in this case, Tischner has already stated, and what's the other gentleman's name? Turley? They have already stated that their interpretation of Dominion is to apply it in a particular way. And we would like to settle it at this level and be gone with it.
Understood.
Yeah, you guys don't want to have to fund changing the legislation. What we need is better legislation.
And we were close last year. We were close last year.
Between this and the last case, is I was arguing with Carrie a little bit about we're talking 4% and how much those units are actually used. I think they're used a lot more for commercial than 4%.
I think they're probably available more for commercial.
Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, but we don't have real data on that.
This a lot more fair.
This case, we have actual data. We're not playing with, well, they're not using it. They're somewhere else, and somebody else is using it. They're actually telling us exactly how much it's being used in these condos for the short-term rental, which I think we're actually getting more to the value and more to a more accurate split than we are with the last case. But that said, I feel the same way as I did.
What you're saying is it makes more sense to approve this one than it did the last one.
Right.
That's what I agree, because this is based on a little above the average of approximate use. The other one, we based it on exactly how many nights they were doing.
They actually did it.
And now they can presumption. We can do that for the next 2 years. They can turn around and rent it for 30 or 40% of the time.
Yeah.
And
not in defense of Russ on this, and not saying nothing against what you just argued, Russ, but you can just take one of those on and get the decision done. You don't have to take 50% of those and put a lot of money in this group. Because I believe you're out of time to try to change policy for 2010 anyway. I think you're...
The cost is the same regardless.
That's...
The cost is the same.
Whether
you do one or...
The research is the research.
It would resolve your issue of putting...
We would rather do that because then we hold the money.
So you would only have to pay one of them under protest, if we pass on all but one of them, that'd give him standing to go take it on up on
that's
one.
Correct.
But he would may just say, okay, we pay the taxes on that one. And
but why would you treat one person different than the other 199? And
yeah, we don't have any justification.
The cost is the same.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying approve. I'm proposing, guys. You're taking it on. I'll look. I'm agreeing totally with it. And I agree. I know what your philosophy is and know what you're saying. But we've built a nest, and it's going to be hard to tear that nest down without harming lots of people.
Again, and I don't know that you should do it, but there's another argument that's stronger for him than it was in the last case, and he's offering you an agreement that they're not going to make it available for nightly rental for more than 170 or 179 days.
179.
And you didn't have that in the other case. So it didn't arguably take it out of the 100% commercial.
Yeah, well, that would be easy enough for them to institute. Like I was saying, she was talking, I said they're saying they ought to set some sort of regime up where your week is only available for 30 days a year or something.
Is there any more questions?
I mean, I'm looking at availability, 179 days, average use, 120, you know.
Set the ratio of 50%.
I'm looking at in between there somehow.
I originally said 50-50. I originally thought 60-40.
We could compromise at 60-40.
I would be willing to go along with something like that.
So that there's a cushion of vacancy?
Right. I mean, the policy still goes to 50, almost 50-50. The policy that they're going to be using to enforce it, so that gives some cushion.
Would you think that prior to making this decision, you better have some representative, some attorney from the schools standing here? You guys are not dealing with $10.
No, I think
you're dealing with millions.
I don't know. It's how many units? 200?
Millions.
How many was it, Cindy?
Approximately 200.
James. That reminds me of a question I was going to ask earlier, and when we made the change because of Shipman, the commercial went way up.
Right.
But now it's going to go down. So we're going to be kind of back where we were to start with. Right?
Right.
But it's in an even numbered year. You guys are fixing to make this decision, and it will be millions in an even numbered year that the budget has already been estimated on. And I think the schools ought to have a representative here to talk to you about what their feelings is on it. Because we're now dealing with pensions.
Well, I don't think these 200 is going to deal in millions. But
the whole county is. I don't know that we're. Are we setting policy?
Excuse me for interrupting. I apologize.
Go ahead.
My group only represents. I mean, the policy. These are specific facts. Yeah. This policy, this company, the way they do business. It would be as if you had a hotel that was split between nightly and residential, and they had a section of the hotel that was only 30 nights and more, and a section of the hotel that was nightly rental. That would meet the criteria, and you would have to recognize that as a 50-50 situation. That's essentially what we have here. It's not a policy for the whole county. It's a policy for someone who actually has put this in place. And again, they were that close to fixing it last year. Three words screwed it up. If they put it back in, it's very likely, hopefully, it will be fixed by next year. But that's what we're asking.
The last case, you made it 4% commercial and 96% residential in all those cases. They didn't, and I'm not arguing for this.
Okay, but let's not bring up the old case. So
they didn't have 179, and they didn't have the evidence that he has.
Right.
So anyway.
All right.
Yeah.
Do we want any motions? Do we want to do some more research?
What is the right thing to do on this?
There is no right thing to do. The thing is, there is no right thing to do because what we do is we jeopardize the county's, and the county receives none of this funding, but we jeopardize the funding for the county. Because we make opinions here that are reversed at the State Tax Commission and throws our ratio completely out of whack, and we end up going to court over issues and things like that, which is all taxpayer expense. And the thing of it is when we make a decision on this level that could be argued 50 ways, instead of taking and denying it and making it go to the people that caused the problem in the first place.
That's who should answer the question.
The state and ordered that is who? Me to...
The state tax commission.
Or the legislature.
Okay, so hold on.
They ordered me to observe and interpret Dominion. They didn't say you've got a choice.
All right, and just and one last couple comments, guys, because we are running long here. So,
and we have followed Dominion.
Well, I think this is important enough to run long.
We have followed Dominion. They've commanded him to follow Dominion. We have followed it. We have followed Dominion, and we're talking, if we do 40, we're changing a classification only. We're talking about a 30% difference. And I believe in the classifications. We're not talking a huge difference.
What I want to do is see the financial impact of the change. But since we're talking about this many parcels, I want to be able to see that. And I don't want to make a harsh decision off of 30 minutes of debate here. But I don't want to make a decision right. That's what I don't.
As a commissioner, you're wanting to see that.
Yeah.
I think as just a pure BOE member, I'm not really worried about that.
Okay. I mean, I'll entertain any motions. If there is anything on the floor.
I'd like to make a motion to table this so we look a little bit more research.
I'll second that.
Motion by Dave to table, second by Kelly. Any more discussion? All those in favor of tabling, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries 5-0. We're going to table this, and we're going to, what we can do is we'll probably have to schedule this, Cindy. When we schedule it, let's let Russ know when we're going to reschedule this to talk about more. We're going to have to carve some more time about it. Is there a way you could get me the financial information of the partial total dollar figure and all that, what we're talking about changing from to? Can you do that? Is that possible?
I think he's got it listed. Don't you have the partial listed for me?
But not the appraised value or the assessed value.
If you look at the total assessed value, if they're all in the same district, you can quickly take that assessed value times the levies and you reduce it by 60% if you're doing a 60-40 split.
Well, I can just see the financial impact of a school district as it's spread out over multiple school districts. I need to look at that.
It's right now split 30-70 a certain way, and you're changing it to...
Is it 30? It's 30-70 now.
No, it's 100% now.
100%
now. So it is a 6%.
Yeah.
Change,
it's a swing.
But it's a 30% change, is my understanding.
Okay, so if you made it a 30%.
If you go 60-40, it's a change of 60 and a half. That's 30. So.
It's a difference between 32 and 19% for 30. For however many.
For 30%, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
You're looking at 3 or 4 million.
Okay.
I don't see how
value.
Okay, not tax.
Right.
Just okay. Yeah. So 3 or 4 million at 19. Yeah. So you're looking $600,000.
That's one school district. That's a lot of money. All right. We're going to table that. Okay. The motion is to table, and we're going to come back with this and make sure we carve some time for that next discussion. Clerk, any other information for BOE before we recess? Next Friday has been added.
A week
so
from
far,
this Friday?
Yeah.
That's correct. And Dave, you are not going to be here.
I won't be here.
On the 23rd?
I won't be here on the 23rd.
Are you looking at calendar now?
I'm sorry.
Well, we're trying to figure out our next day. Okay. We're going to have to...
So David and...
Yeah, that's bad.
Danny, well, both gone.
I mean, if we're going to do the airport, maybe we could do that on another day.
What is...
Are you going to be here on Thursday?
No, I've got
We're going to have to do this. We're going to have to look at some calendars and get back. We're not going to be able to figure this out on the microphone here. All right.
I've got two that I was going to talk to you about when I went to look into.
Yes, sir. Thank you for coming in.
When I went in to look at them, the value was different in 2009, so these are actually going to be two that are going to increase.
That we voted on?
Yeah, because last year we decreased them.
Let's just bring those up next session.
Okay.
Let's just bring them. Just don't.
I won't apply them.
We got Wednesday, right? Or did you move it because you're not going to be here?
I'm not going to be here, but you can always, you guys, if you got majority, let's just. What I'd say is this: we're gonna have to. They're gonna be in contact with everyone about their calendar, so we can make sure we have enough time to deliberate both the airport in this case and all the other issues we've got. So. I guess let's get with Cindy and talk about calendars as fast as possible. No. What we did is try to carve out, we talked about carving out time to talk about the airport. And a work session of multiple hours to try to work through that. So, with nothing else, we're going to recess the BOE session for today.
You can take a little recess before you start meeting.